Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after Mr. Wonderful. Mr. Wonderful at your service, as always. It's good to be here with you folks, and especially when I get a chance to reintroduce you to someone I've told you about many times before, Michael Cox, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas in the great state of Texas. He's our good friend. He's also the author of, the co-author of the Pulitzer Prize nominated book, Myths of Rich and Poor. But more importantly, he's our good friend, Michael Cox. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. How are you? I've been here a while, and I really missed you.
Well, I've missed you, too. Where have you been?
Well, it's not your fault that I haven't been on. And I've been in a cave for a while trying to figure out some new stuff. You got to go away and nurture the roots every so often.
Exactly.
Things.
Exactly. Well, you guys do good work down there at the Dallas Fed, and I've been following you guys for a long time. I still get your publication, your Southwest Economy publication, every quarter or so, and I really appreciate that. Michael, one of the things that I know is on your mind these days is something that my audience has heard me talk about. I talk about it quite a bit when I do keynote speeches, and that's globalization. Now, I think that Lou Dobbs is dangerous. I think that the way Lou Dobbs presents what he calls outsourcing America is dangerous because it's only one side of the issue. He leaves a lot of important facts out. He's certainly biased against it, it seems to me. But what I tell people is that globalization is not some sinister plot. It's not something that the politicians are doing to us or big corporations are doing against us. Globalization is the natural progression of the marketplace based on our intellectual development. And it's the trade manifestation, in my opinion, of our intellectual development and our ability to create products and new ways of doing business. And it began when the Phoenicians traded with the Egyptians 5,000 years ago.
That's exactly right. The first nations that were wealthy were the nations that traded among each other, and they lived in the cradle of civilization. And if you look at where trade first settled, serious trade and wealth did, it was around the Mediterranean Ocean because it was cheaper to get carry goods across the ocean than it was across land.
Yep.
And so on the rim of the Mediterranean Ocean, many wealthy nations lived. And, just carrying a ton of wheat was much cheaper to do 500 miles across the Mediterranean Ocean than 10 miles on land.
That's right.
So.
And safer in a lot of ways. But
what you said, Jim, is right, except you left out just one thing, and I think it's implicit.
Well, that's what you're here for, is to point these things out, Michael.
The current round manifestation of globalization, the current round, is a manifestation of technology, in particular, communication technology. Our nation has been through something like this before, a very, very strong round of nationalization. At one time, we were all regional economies, and we could produce things and manufacture them in plants, but we couldn't really ship them around very easily. But then around 1870, 1890, the amount of railroad track in this nation tripled from 52,000 miles to 163,000 miles. So all of a sudden, it became possible to move these manufactured goods within our borders. And it was our nation's first experiments with free trade. And we moved from being a collection of regional economies to one big national one. That upset all cost calculations and all ways of doing things for a while, and folks had to reorder what they do, how they do it, where they produce, where we get wood, and where we get lumber. And
it shifted some paradigms from one region to the other, didn't it?
Yes. I mean, we did, exactly, because we used to have to produce everything locally, everything you needed. But then after the development of the railroad, we had regional pockets of industry in the southeast, which were furniture and textiles. In fact, New England lost textiles owing to that.
That's the reason we have minimum wage today is because of the pressure that the South put on the Northeast for textile jobs.
And who today would say we're worse off because of the railroad, because of that round of nationalization?
Mm-hmm.
So what was happening back then, which was taking us rapidly to the end of the manufacturing age, because we could finally move the things that we could produce. Who would say that thing repeated over the world is going to be bad? I mean, it's going to have the same good effects, except this time it's a collection of nations becoming globalized, not states becoming nationalized. This time the catalyst is the technology, is not the train or the railroad. This time the catalyst is the microchip and the internet. Because before the internet, we could produce information, process it in microchips, and store it in DRAM chips, but it couldn't move it. But now we can move it. So this is very, very parallel to that period in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
With all the good effects, and with all the hardship along the way, and all the consternation, and you know.
Right. Michael, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more about globalization, not just what it is, but what it's doing for you and me if we take advantage of it, if we think of it as a tool, something we can use rather than the enemy. Can't do that. 10-20 tail, actually. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. It took me by surprise. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to use it to your advantage. It'll help you start, run, and grow your small business. Whatever stage of the business cycle you're in, I think you'll find some help there through the archives of the past interviews we've had with our Brain Trust members, the articles that I and many of them have written. My newsletter, which comes to you on Sunday, all you got to do is subscribe to that. We'll send it to you by email. The blog is updated every weekday. Hope you use that. You can come and get it at the site, or we'll send it to you every weekday, or you can go directly to the blog at jimsblog.biz. So check those things out. Michael Cox is all over our website. He's been there for a long time because he's been a member of our Brain Trust for a long time. He's the co-author of Myths of Rich and Poor by Michael Cox and his Richard Alm, which is his co-author. That was a Pulitzer Prize nominated book. And as you know, Michael is a VP and senior VP and chief economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Michael, a couple of quick things on globalization I'd like to point out. There was a report about a year ago of the number of jobs that were lost in the manufacturing countries, the largest manufacturing countries. And you probably know this, but a lot of people don't know that the country that lost the most manufacturing jobs for that period studied, maybe it may have been 04 or 03, I don't know, maybe it was the first 3 or 4 years of the century, was not the United States. That's what when I ask people, what do you think, they always say the United States. The country that lost the most, not only the highest number, but the highest percentage of manufacturing jobs in that period studied, was China. And the reason, Michael, was what you said before we went to the break, technology.
That's right. Ultimately, if you look at the history of the United States, you can't hold on to jobs in any sector of the economy forever, because technology is a relentless march to make you need be able to do work with less labor. Look at how many, it was technology that came to the farms that made the number of people we need per 100 working on the farms go down from 95 to 2.
Right.
Technology, we used to call them robots in factories, come in and replacing people, and manufacturing is a share of the economy. Share of employment peaked in 1953, 30 or so percent of people working in manufacturing. It's been steadily declining long before globalization. It's now at about 10%, and it'll get down to single digits probably next year.
There's one other thing, Michael, that I'd like to stick in here that I think is really important that we think about if we're trying to make friends with the globalization, folks. If you're trying to find a way, which I haven't had any trouble doing myself. If you're trying to find a way, though, to get comfortable with globalization, think about this. I'm going to remind you of something you heard me say before. The great French economist and comedian Frédéric Bastiat said, "When goods cross borders, armies don't." We're better off to trade with the 1.3 billion customers in China than we are to aim missiles at each other, Michael.
This year, I want to add to that. This year, we did a report on globalization called Racing to the Top, which is the opposite of what most people think, that globalization is a race to the bottom. And we took on a whole new aspect of this. And we, here's what we did. Most people recognize that globalization has potential to improve companies and, you know, consumers' lives. Ever since David Ricardo in 1817 showed us the theory of comparative advantage, we know how if we send our low-cost, if we take advantage of low-cost labor abroad, it makes our goods cheaper. What we don't think about, though, is globalization's power to discipline governments and make governments behave. And we show there's another economic theory which we is very straightforward, and we live by it in this country. It's called voting with your feet. The fact that you and I can get up and move from state to state in this country, and when we don't like something that a particular state government is doing, or we do like the mix of amenities that they're providing for us with our tax dollars, the fact that we're mobile and we can vote with our feet disciplines the state governments not to get too crazy, too taxing.
Except for New Jersey.
Well, it's funny you mention that, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Except for New Jersey. They still don't get it. Go ahead.
Well, that same theory, of course, applies at the national level. When people and when resources of any type, productive resources, capital, financial capital, physical capital, people, ideas, are mobile, what we find in our report is almost every kind of economic policy improves. Nations that are the most globalized, most open, are the ones that have the best economic policies in general. We've all seen this for the United States over the past two decades in terms of monetary policy. We've seen the inflation rate converge to a much, much lower level than it was 20 years ago because the central bank, for example, really can't let the inflation rate bump up too high anymore because we lose international investors.
It's another reason why recessions, when we have them, aren't as deep and as long as they used to be.
Right.
But Michael, Mike, hold on. All of this, even though the most enlightened person would listen and say, yes, that makes sense, but that's cold comfort if you just lost your job because of globalization. It's cold comfort if your business just got put into jeopardy because of the aspects and the influence of globalization. What do we say to those people?
Well, it's always been cold comfort. That's exactly right. But the entire history of America is one entire grapes of wrath, off the farm, in the factory, out the factory, into factory jobs, into service sector jobs. What makes this nation strong, in fact, is exactly that process of what you call creative destruction, where we constantly have to re-up our skills, get better, develop new ways of doing things personally, keep up with. See, what's killing Europe is the fact that they seek so much job security.
Yeah.
Same thing as in Japan.
See, exactly.
You know, it's just the fact of human nature that if you get protected too much, people tend to let down they get a little bit.
There are always going to be winners and losers in the marketplace. The key is, folks, is not to fall in love with what you do because you may have to do something different. And you may have to do it, and these days you may have to do it quicker than ever before. Quick break, right back with Michael Cox. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Tintel, stay with us. Back, it's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Michael Cox, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And folks, I encourage you to check out their website. It's dallasfed.org, right, Michael?
That's right.
And it's not your grandfather's Federal Reserve Bank website. Some good stuff there, lots of good things. Be sure to check out their annual report, which is always a clinic on how to understand the economy and how you fit into the economy. Michael, I just want to continue to congratulate you on that outstanding document every year.
Thank you. Yeah, and this year's on globalization. It's perfect for this subject today.
Absolutely. All right, so Michael, what would you have to say? We've got small businesses out there who either are really threatened or they fear that they're going to be threatened by globalization. What would you say to them?
Well, you got to think globally and act globally. I would say, seriously, if you can get involved in having a global labor force, and then you can become a part of this train and benefit from it. I just came back from a Tech Titans awards dinner here in Dallas a couple of nights ago, and I noticed that as the companies got up and talked about their company, the fastest growing companies, we have 1,000 employees now. Sure, they had 100 U.S. employees, but they had 900 abroad. The 100 here were the executive positions.
Mm-hmm.
America's 5% of the world population. theoretically, we could employ all of our five with the other 95 people in the rest of the country working for us.
Well, see, the way I'd rather think about that is that means that 95% of our customers are not within our borders.
That's right, but 95% of our...
I should say prospects.
95 of our prospective employees who work for us.
Yep.
And, we can make money off of them as their managers and supervisors.
And more jobs can be performed wherever you want it to be performed.
That's exactly right, especially service sector jobs. And that's what this current round is on this month. I gave a speech out in it was April in Las Vegas, where the person who introduced me had a company of 105 people, and five of them were American and 100 of them were Chinese programmers. They were service sector people who could write their programs sent it online. Now, I think if folks want to ask themselves, think about it, can my job be outsourced? They ask themselves the following three questions. Is my job going to be outsourced? Number one, does it have to be done here? If you're a truck driver, taxi driver, barber,
you're okay.
Well, there are many service, many jobs, you're okay. Just the way it can be outsourced. Second thing, does my skill, at work, do I use a skill which is high on the totem of talents? Okay, and the totem of talents from the bottom up is physical labor, manual dexterity and motor skills, formulaic intelligence, analytic reasoning, imagination, creativity, people skills, and emotional intelligence. If you're on top of that, where you're mainly working with people, no, we still need you because you're not a manufacturing worker. We're not going to outsource. We can't outsource people skills very easy. We need to be the managers. The third question you need to ask yourself is, what industry am I in? If I'm in, here's some what I think are going to be big growth industries as a result of globalization. Entertainment, recreation, and leisure industry is booming, and we're in the front of it. You know, our movies and all of our recreation, our education industry, our medical industry, our technology industry, our legal industry, and there are a couple others are all winners, big winners in this process. And so that's, I think, ask yourself what kind of industry you're in, what skill you're using, and, just can you can stop after the first box. You can just stop if the answer is no, it can't be. So people industries. Our comparative advantage in this country is people skills. We have a very diverse population. That's good for us. It helps us manage folks. Also, we got to the service sector, deep into the service sector, long before other countries, so we've had to learn to manage people and not, produce a kumquat or a VCR. We have people skills, and that's our new comparative advantage.
And we are leading the world in 21st century understandings, in the understanding of the 21st century marketplace, in my opinion. What do you think?
Absolutely true. And, think about being in America from the first day you're born. You start hearing about markets, and you turn on the TV, it's always about business. Your radio program, people are constantly getting an education in this country in a way that they don't get in other countries. We're so far ahead in this way.
And don't forget, folks, what Bastiat said 150, 60 years ago, when goods cross borders, armies don't.
That's right. Trade keeps has been very good for world peace. That's happening now, not just in terms of trade. It's happening in global capital markets. Funds are being released throughout the globe to international savers and investors. Between those two, ideas are crossing planets.
The United States is benefiting from the globalization of money. No question about that. The capital that we have access to. Michael, thank you for being here. The website is DallasFed.org, and Michael's book is Myths of Rich and Poor. Thanks, Michael, for being here. See you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.